This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the NVP studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. We hear so much about people cutting the cord and going to streaming services, but we rarely hear about people leaving streaming services. Editor-in-Chief of Extremist, Rob Toledo, is going to give me reasons on why people are leaving streaming services. Thanks for joining me, Rob.
Thanks for having me on.
I don't know if you heard about it, but this was pretty new for me. There was a poll for Netflix subscribers, and they said that 14.5% of them said, hey, we'll leave to go to Disney Plus, and that's equivalent to 8.7 million subscribers. Man, do you think Netflix is in danger?
I mean, danger probably not, but they have to be nervous, right? Because Disney has probably the deepest pockets of any entertainment company in the world, right? And Disney also has a very clear target on Netflix. You know, that's their North Star. They're gunning for it. They want those 100 million or whatever, 140 million subscribers that Netflix has to be Disney subscribers. Now, here's where I would be a little bit more optimistic on behalf of Netflix is, you know, Netflix is still a relatively cheap, you know, entertainment option for most people. I don't think many people will actually end up going through with canceling when they sign up for Disney. Another example kind of that same tone is, you know, anytime Netflix raises their prices or, you know, pulls some show off the service, like a lot of people kind of get on the internet and talk about how they're going to cancel their subscription. And, you know, every quarter, though, Netflix subscriber numbers keep going up. So, you know, time and time again, Netflix has proved its sustainability through some PR nightmares. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, they are an entertainment powerhouse. Now, is it going to be more competitive with Disney in the market? Absolutely. You know, Disney's coming in at a really good price point. You know, they're going to be a few dollars cheaper than Netflix. They're going to have access to a massive library of movies and TV shows. You know, they own just about everything these days. So if I'm Netflix, I'm definitely on the long term getting nervous for sure.
Well, not just Netflix. I think of what other services are out there. Hulu. I was personally, only one maybe show was Marvel's Runaway on Hulu that I wanted to watch. And I don't like this anymore, the seasons. I don't like it anymore. So I canceled Hulu. But what about those network, those subscribing streaming services? I mean, they only have one or two shows, and you're going to go up against Disney.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, a service like, let's talk through kind of the two majors, and I think that's probably Hulu and Amazon would be the two that I would kind of immediately jump to mind. Hulu, to me, has a different, you know, offering than I think Disney is going to be rolling out with, and that's kind of, you know, their next day television option. Like, Hulu is probably as close to it as like a TV replacement as you're going to get. I don't think they've ever really focused on, you know, they have a few good shows, but like you're saying, their original library is considerably lower. I think their focus traditionally has been to be, hey, you don't want to have a traditional cable subscription, but you want to watch a lot of the TV shows that are, you know, out now. You can watch them next day with Hulu. So it's a little bit different of a value prop. But then there's Amazon, who I do think would have to look at this and get a little bit more nervous, although, you know, Amazon is worth like $970 bajillion. So, you know, they have the budget to go after and to compete, I think. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I don't know if Amazon has really made as big of a splash in the TV market as they've hoped. Certainly they've won some awards for some kind of like specialty TV shows. And I think, you know, they've got the Lord of the Rings, you know, show coming out at some point. But at the same time, you know, they haven't had like that same success that I think Netflix had in their early days. And I think that makes, you know, probably has to make them a little bit nervous.
Yeah, they're definitely nervous, especially since when everybody just gets Amazon because of Amazon Prime. I mean, you just get the.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I'm not there for the shows.
like, it's definitely a nice to have. And I think that actually drives Jeff Bezos a little bit crazy because he wants, you know, Netflix video, or excuse me, Amazon Prime video or whatever they're calling it to be successful. You know, they're putting a ton of money into this, and he wants to compete in the entertainment world. And I don't know if it's a pet project or if, you know, for whatever reason, he just sees it as like a future part of the company as being a big part of it. But he is definitely putting his weight behind it. You know, so it's just, they're just not there yet, though. It's like you're saying, it's most people sign up for Amazon Prime because they get the 2 or 1 day delivery or whatever. And then that's, you know, it's like, oh, sweet. They have a streaming library. They check it out maybe a couple times and then never use it again.
Now, we've been talking about how people will transfer from one streaming service to another, but I read this other study that people are canceling their streaming services due to low quality. What does that even mean?
Yeah, I mean, it's a little ambiguous, right, because it could mean a couple things. I would be willing, though, that, you know, first and foremost, people are probably they're talking specifically about two or three maybe things. One, of course, at the top of the list is probably just, like, the actual buffering quality. Like, is the show showing up in a high-definition version of it? Is there buffering issues? Is there slowdown? Does the show stop in the middle of it, you know, for whatever reason? That's getting less and less common as internet speeds around the country have, you know, kind of matched the ability to, you know, deliver a show at a good speed. Second, I think it's just the library quality, you know, whether that's originals or kind of, you know, buying the rights to third-party content. You know, if the library quality starts decreasing and, you know, the shows aren't as good, or, you know, if there's not as much original content that people are enjoying, I think that's where that, you know, people start saying, you know, the quality just isn't there to justify me paying for this.
Mm. Do you think there are any streaming services out there that are just difficult to use?
Well, the biggest one definitely is Amazon for me. I mean, how do I put this? Like, when you're shopping on Amazon and there's just so much information everywhere, apparently that helps you make purchases, right? Like, whether it's the reviews or the questions and answers and, you know, or pictures of the product or, you know, blah, blah, blah. The list goes on. But when it comes to their streaming library, it's just impossible. It's just such a pain to try to figure out what to watch, you know. Like, when you're flipping through it, you're like, am I going to have to pay to watch this, or is it actually included in the Prime subscription? And, you know, for such a big service, you know, you would think that for such a big budget, you'd think the service would put a lot more emphasis on, like, ease of use. But, you know, we've also seen it a lot with, you know, I'm going to complain about Netflix here for a second. Like, it's been a year since they launched that auto-playing trailer feature. I cannot for the life of me figure out why I just can't simply turn that off, because it drives me nuts. You know, I'm just, like, flipping through, and, like, auto starts playing the trailer on my TV for whatever, like, title I'm hovering over. Oh, it just drives me crazy. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes. I actually mute the TV when it goes on.
Yes.
I get so annoyed, and I was like, you know what? I don't even want to watch you now.
I know, and you and I are not alone in this. Like, I poke around on the Netflix forums or on social media, and people are always complaining about this, and Netflix just rolls with it. I'm just like, they must know something we don't, because maybe it increases, you know, engagement somehow, but for me, it just drives me bonkers. It makes me not want to log in and see what's on there, you know? Yeah, it drives me nuts.
Now, when it comes to streaming services, there's all these articles out there that'll sit there and say, hey, people are going to cancel their subscription to this place and cancel it to that place, and they're all going to migrate to a new streaming service. But I'm always like, well, if I was paying $100 for cable, I got $100 to play around for streaming services. I don't understand how people, or these studies, or the people who conduct the studies, don't think that. Like, they're going to have multiple streaming services. What's the big deal?
Yeah, that's kind of how I view it. Is I don't think there's one winner here. I think there's probably room for, you know, people to have somewhere between one and five streaming services and having no trouble with that, you know, from a budget perspective. Because like you're saying, you know, traditional cable packages is $100 plus minimum, you know, for the good stuff. So, you know, for me to be able to go, okay, you know, Netflix has a few shows I want to check out in the next couple of months. Hulu, you know, I like for their next day TV. And, you know, HBO, because Game of Thrones is on right now. You know, that to me is a great deal, because that's $30, you know, $35. Not bad at all. You know, I think when, you know, you hear all these studies about, oh, people are too inundated with streaming services. Yes, I think we're definitely heading that direction. Like, I was just reading that, you know, NBC is working on some, you know, next version of their streaming or whatever. And, you know, that might take some of the shows like The Office off Netflix. And, you know, it's like, well, okay, well... You know, I don't want to pay for just one show necessarily, but, you know, at the same time, like, you know, as long as I can get, you know, 70-80% of what I want to watch, like, you know, I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah, speaking of what I like to watch, I've noticed that Netflix has been canceling everything. They give it like 3 seasons and then boom, they're done. What's up with that?
Yeah, I just actually read an article about that was showing that Netflix has some sort of trajectory average of about 3 seasons per show. Yeah, I mean, Netflix isn't going to play this on pretty tight lift, but I think I'm kind of under the impression that it's probably just the number of seasons that, like, allows to bring in a number of new subscribers that Netflix is looking for. It might also have a little bit to do with retention, you know, like, if you can keep somebody on the service for, you know, a couple seasons of a show, then they're more likely to stay on forever. But, yeah, there's been a lot of casualties, and I do think that this goes back to maybe 2 years ago. Reed Hastings, the Netflix CEO, came out and said, like, I want to take more risks and I want to fail more often, you know, which basically I think is implying, like, we're going to put out a lot more content, but with that, there's going to be a lot of attrition too. You know, there's going to be shows that get canceled. There's going to be a lot of things people like that we have to take off because the viewership's not there. You know, so I think this is part of their bigger strategy. And unfortunately, there's a lot of collateral damage in that strategy.
when it comes to certain shows that got canceled, all the Marvel ones, I could see why they're like, I'm not going to help you, you know, Disney. I'm not going to help you put money in your pocket. I get that one. But then there are ones like the Santa Clarita Diet. I really liked that show. I thought it was good. What? I mean, it had Drew Barrymore in it, right? That should have been gold. What happened there?
You know, I think that you're right. It was kind of, it was a great show. It was really fun, very unique concept. And I certainly enjoyed the direction the story was going. It didn't feel like it was dead-ending anytime soon, but yeah, that one's the mystery still out because apparently the show producers had no idea either. And, wow. You know, I guess somebody at some executive at Netflix probably saw some numbers that suggested it just wasn't, the show wasn't doing the performing the way it needed to. And, you know, they pulled the plug. And I think we're going to see a lot of that in the next 5 years of Netflix. Like small communities will fall in love with shows and then but the budget versus the benefit just doesn't line up for Netflix. And so we're going to see more cancellations like that. You know, I used to always think of like Netflix as the place where if a show got canceled on normal television, Netflix would save it, you know. And now I think we're going to, is it like if Netflix cancels a show, will one of the networks pick it up? Like could FX pick up the rest of that show? Or, you know, I don't know. We'll just be curious to see how that goes. But yeah, I think, you know, kind of the saddest part of that whole thing is just how I think honestly it sounded like the producers and the actors were kind of surprised by the cancellation, you know. And, you know, I'd kind of heard that Netflix, and I don't know how true this is across the board, but at least to some extent, Netflix doesn't really share viewership numbers even with the show's producers, you know, because it's typically Netflix keeps those numbers super locked down to avoid, you know, leaks and stuff like that. So, you know, the show producers might not really have any idea outside of Netflix going, yeah, things are going good, or no, things are not going good. You know, so I think it can be a real surprise for them if things get canceled, you know, versus like if a network television show isn't doing well, everyone kind of knows because of the rating systems, you know, and stuff like that. But Netflix is just playing a different ballgame.
So I have a theory and I want your take on it. This could be horribly wrong.
Sure.
Okay. So in the music industry with the smaller artists, they'll give them like $10 million, but that $10 million isn't just for like a signing. It's also for their marketing. It's for their studio time to get producers. It's for their marketing. It's for, you know, doing their any type of event, all their promotion, right? What if the budgets for these shows at Netflix, they give them this huge budget, right? But they're supposed to do all that too, because Netflix doesn't put that stuff on billboards. Netflix doesn't put it in newspapers. What happens if they're giving you this big budget and you're supposed to use that money for some of your promotion too?
I mean, that could be. I've heard, you know, as much as like they definitely are going after shows where people kind of have social followings or trying to pick up actors or actresses who have, you know, kind of a presence that can draw on an audience, you know, especially trying to find people early. Isn't that kind of the way it seems to be working now? It's like you might see these big dollar amounts, but a lot of that money has to get spread pretty thin, you know. Like, you know, Drew Barrymore is probably not cheap at the end of the day. You know, typically as shows go on longer and longer too, like I'm sure her salary was going up. And so they probably had a number in mind when they started the show. And then, you know, I'm sure she, and rightfully so, you know, her and her agents are probably like, well, now we want more money for more seasons. And Netflix just goes, nope. And kind of it sets, what I'm curious about too, is does it set like a tone for future content producers? Like, you don't expect to get paid by Netflix. Like, keep your mouth shut if you want to keep the show on, you know. You know, is Netflix going to turn into the big bad television, you know, like the big bad television network at some point, you know, kind of with the fat cats in the suit sitting on the 32nd floor at a boardroom, you know, while the content producers are down in the lobby or whatever trying to get their paycheck? You know, like, is that the direction the company's heading? I hope not, but, you know, it's a probability.
Well, the thing is that Netflix has been spending billions of dollars on content. So I don't know why they would do that, because, I mean, they're willing to spend the money, it looks like. I mean, why spend so much on the content? I mean, couldn't they just get a no-name actor and just have really good writers?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely the direction they've gone with some shows, certainly. I think the problem is, though, is that, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, however you look at it, I think big names still draw the audience, you know, like it's easier to bring in viewership right off the bat if you have a name attached to a project. Now, that's not to say it's not always possible. Like, I think about, like, you know, Stranger Things, like, outside of Winona Ryder and a couple other kind of, like, character actors, like, I didn't really recognize any names on that show, and boom, look what a phenomenon it became, you know? But at the same time, you know, I still think they want the Will Smiths of the world. You know, they have a movie coming out with, I think it was, like, Robert De Niro and Joe Pesci and, like, all these big actors directed by Martin Scorsese, and it's like, you know, so they still clearly want to put names on projects because it's, you know, I think that's how you kind of keep your credibility.
I don't want to call them big actors, because Drew Barrymore, she's a big actress, but she's not as hot as, you know, Daniel Radcliffe. It's just the newer, like, older generation versus the newer generation. Maybe they're just getting all these older actors to give them validity for now, and then they're like, no, I'm done with you, never again. And then they're on to the new next thing. I mean, maybe that's what they did here.
Yeah, absolutely. Could be.
I think that's sad because I wanted more of Drew Barrymore.
Yeah, we all did. Well, apparently not everybody, but yeah, at least some of us.
But do you think that overspending in general is going to destroy the content market only because you're going to have all these big names, these big directors, these big writers, and it's going to have no room for the little guy?
Oh, my goodness. And think about how much more competitive it's going to get with Disney bidding on stuff.
Right.
You know, I mean, not that they already haven't been, but like, because they own ABC and a bunch of all the cable channels and stuff and Disney Network and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I'm thinking of from the perspective of Disney and Netflix directly competing for a show. And then, like, does that limit, like, you know, kind of your premium cable channels? Like, does HBO have a little bit of a problem? You know, because, you know, they're tightening the belt over there now that AT&T owns them. Or do channels like FX or AMC, like, can they even play ball against Netflix and Disney for the top talent? Like, man, I don't know. So then you're those poor are totally reliant on, you know, just kind of getting lucky. You know, like, I think about FX, and it's like, you know, they gave It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia a chance with, you know, basically a handy cam and a check for like $10,000, and said, okay, we'll see what you can do. Don't quote me on that number, but you get the point. And it's, you know, it's probably not too far off, honestly, but it's like, you know, in the world of Netflix and Disney, like, how do those small networks compete? And it's just going to be more luck than it is anything at this point. But, you know, at the same time, like, I wish I had a show concept to pitch, you know, like if I were a show producer, it'd be a lot easier to find a home. You know, I don't know if you watch South Park, but there was that joke where somebody called into Netflix and basically the person answering the phone goes, Netflix, you're approved. Your show idea is approved. You know, like we'll take anything. So that's kind of, I think, where we're at right now. I think hopefully it'll slow down, but I'm not holding my breath.
Well, Rob, I got to know, what have you been watching the past couple months? Because I've been kind of teetering in and out. Personally, I was waiting for Avengers Endgame, so I don't know.
Yeah. Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, I saw it, and I liked it as a movie, but as a nerd, I was kind of disappointed.
Kind of the word I've been getting. I've heard entertaining, but just, yeah, it was problematic. I haven't seen it yet. On Netflix, and I'm trying to avoid all spoilers at all costs.
Yeah.
There's a show that came out that really kind of grabbed my attention called Russian Doll. Have you heard of it?
No, what's that one about?
It's kind of one of these like small comedies. I only recognize one person on the cast list, and she was from American Pie. It was like the last movie she was in. But it's this movie about this woman who wakes up in a bathroom and then going like at a friend's house at a party, going out, kind of living her life, and then she dies in all these different ways, and then returns to the bathroom and has to relive the same day. It's kind of like a Groundhog Day, but like with a darker tone. I've really been enjoying that. And then there's this show on Hulu right now called Rami that's kind of like a Master of None type comedy that I've really been enjoying as well. So those are the two that I think have kind of caught my attention the past month.
Oh, man, I'm such a baddie. You didn't even talk about a Cobra Kai YouTube Red.
Oh, yeah. I can see. Yeah, apparently they're coming out with some more seasons now, too.
And I'm not sure what direction they're taking that show, but I'm not rooting for Daniel Russo at all. And I'm kind of shocked about that. He's supposed to be the good guy, but every twist and turn, and I'm like, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing this. And I yell at the screen because I don't watch it on TV. And I'm like, I'm yelling at my screen, like, what are you doing, Daniel? You know, I think you're the bad guy. Or is this for an audience for younger people?
I think it's a little bit of that, but I also think it's a subversion of expectations. You know, I think they wanted to be a little bit more fun with it. And I think that's kind of the direction. Again, I haven't seen the newest season, but that's the direction I've heard that they're going with it. So I think it's fun. It was definitely a shock surprise. Like, if you had told me in concept about it, you know, a year ago when the first season came out, I would have laughed you out of the room, and now apparently it's done very well, so that's good.
Surprisingly, right? And you know what?
Yeah.
It's 30 minutes every episode, and it doesn't feel like there's any filler, because you know sometimes there's filler episodes or there's filler moments.
Yeah.
But this is like all part of the plot, every single scene. So it kind of doesn't feel like, oh, I don't have to watch it. But in this case, it's like, oh, I'm watching it, and it's going to be relevant later on. I enjoy that because I hate fillers.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of it. A lot of shows. So,
well, is there anything else that we should be looking out for in terms of any other streaming services?
So Netflix has an original movie coming out, or maybe it's like a short series or something, but it's based around, it's like a Zac Efron playing Ted Bundy called Extremely Wicked, shockingly evil and vile. And it's been interesting because they had like this tone on in the first trailer that was like it was supposed to kind of feel like a dark comedy, and then everyone on the internet was like, no, 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 that's stupid. So then they like redid the trailer as like this dark kind of like not thriller but suspense, and it looks really interesting. So it's coming out on Netflix this month. Amazon actually has a show coming out called Good Omens, which is based on the Neil Gaiman novel. The trailer looked really promising. It had a lot of fun actors in it. So I'm looking forward to that with some trepidation that, you know, Amazon never actually really wowed me with their originals, but this one might do it for me. So those are the two I'm looking forward to this month.
Well, Rob, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can we find more information about you?
Yeah, check us out at extremist.com, and hopefully we've got the latest news on your favorite streaming service.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapane.com. That's masonverapaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.